interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
I'm back, bitches. So what does it all mean? I'm finally back and there's no more revisited media, even though I have enough, probably not as much as Prince. But I figure if I do 3 to 4 episodes and then go on hiatus where I can work on other things like I worked on the past 6 weeks, you can expect PIT, book tea, Star Trek tea, sports tea, pop culture tea, and reality TV tea. And in between, you could also expect republishing and chair twerking because I have bad knees and feet. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Tim Fro is Reading or a bonus episode of Tim Fro's Bar if I get sponsors, but not until then. And enjoy this shake mix. Better way to introduce this part or this segment of PIT with Tim Fro. So welcome to this segment called Inch High Private Eye Chronicles. And you may wonder why I decided to have this as a segment or why am I planning. I hope it's not too distracting, but that is my hot tub in the background bubbling as I sit here on this wonderful Sunday morning. And this is partially the reason why I continue to do what I do and also have decided to pivot. So I have a decent corporate job. I make a grip. I would like to be able to move on, not necessarily retire, but start a new episode in less than 2 years. I would be at this particular position for a total of 7 years, and this is probably one of the longest employments that I've ever had. I think I like my colleagues, or I tolerate my colleagues well enough, or and vice versa, because we all work from home. There's never been an instance where we all have worked together. There's not so much office politics or drama because from the admin staff to all the supportive staff, we all work in our homes. The team lead has to go in intermittently for depositions, etc. But that's basically it. There's not a whole bunch of drama. From any of our standpoint. Which I think is good. The biggest drama I have is And the grossest thing I have to do is rinse the bird poop off, because I have to share my porch with these birds. And I'm keeping my eye on a big old wasp right now that I'm getting ready to spray with my Raid. I like the idea of working from home. And whatever I needed, I knew that I would be able to utilize the skill as a semi-medical investigator, a writer, because I can write a report or I can judge the validity of what an insurer will and will not pay for based on benefits or policy. I don't mind reading. I can consume a great amount of information. And I also am always looking for the truth. And I'm okay with the gray areas because I can use judgment. And it just seems that, and also, I watched a recent interview of Apollo Nida of Real Housewives of Atlanta fame. He was into asset recovery. He was more than a repo man. What he did was some against the law, ran up against federal law, identity theft and the like, and kept all of the assets for himself instead of returning them to the rightful owners. And also recently in the mess that happened with my father, I was actually impressed by the investigators on his murderer's case. And if it had been, if that joker hadn't confessed, I'm sure his attorney would have had to utilize a private investigator if there was any dealing, if there was any question about the police dealing with that case crazy, or he had to find, or somebody actually pointed the finger, but that joker pointed the finger to himself. But that's what PIs do. They also find people that don't want to be found. They do legal air searches and pre-employment. You can make a whole business on just doing pre-employment checks. And then I started looking into the Lady Pinkertons, and I had written a part for two detectives in one of my creative, my screenplays that both lead the Black Lady Pinkertons of Tennessee. I'm actually working on a trademark and starting that branch of my business. But I say all of those things to say is you should never be dependent on one stream of income, because nothing tomorrow may or may not be given. And you should always work smarter, not necessarily harder, but always always work to the best of your abilities, because people are going to look at you always cockeyed crazy. And also, at this level of income, people will try to say or try to make it seem that, no, you can't save or you're not smart enough, even though there must be. I always look at people that actually have issues with their own self-esteem, or they may seem less than. Because it's easier to give someone their props because they look like somebody that always are going to make the right decision, or they say something or do something eloquently. That's what is expected. But when you do, but when that's your baseline and you still don't get recognized, you may want to look for something else, because you can always rest assured that you're never going to get that type of props from a person that will never. There's nothing that you can do that will allow a person to give you your props right where you are. You can't trust them to do that. They know that you will never, and you can't demand it, because that's not in their wheelhouse. They don't have the type of tools. And then you wonder why. And then they always wonder why. Well, why wouldn't you stay or work just as hard or do X, Y, and Z? Because I had faith that somebody previously had no problem. Well trained, and I reciprocated it every single day. I basically were to defend my job, because I knew that person had my back and would defend me and work just as hard. And until that person, I feel like I'm talking circles, but the whole point is if you're always going to look for someone to give you your props or to make you work hard because you feel like you will carry that person in that department because it's worth it. But not everybody's like that. And you should never also sacrifice your mental health, your well-being, your sanity, if you know it's never going to be reciprocated. I can see actions now and grace given to other people, and within my own current department, and I'm just like, this department will survive. The only thing that they'll have to get rid of all of us if they basically completely shutter the doors. But do I trust any one of us to support any of us? No, not really. And it's not all that deep to me. I'm actually really glad that we do work from home, because that's the only reason why I think I've been at this job as long as I have been, because I don't have to do a bunch of one-on-ones. I only have to get on once a week and talk through these people through Zoom. So it's cool. And it makes me wanting to pivot and create my own investigative agency, because number one, I know how much money I want to make, how much I need to save, so I can truly make my pivot at my own expense instead of being always under the gun and somebody forcing me to pivot. So, with that said, and thus, and instead of me going into accumulating a whole bunch of debt, having to get a bunch of commercial property, a lot of the work that you can actually do as a private investigator can actually be done from your home, from your computer. If you're under surveillance, you can use your car, and it's mobile, and it's also a write-off. With very little capital, startup capital, you can actually build and create a one-of-a-kind, lucrative business that is also satisfying in the results. And if you just stick to just getting the truth, return of property, return of kids, background checks to keep pedophiles and degenerates away from your family, then so be it. And if you're trying to jilt an insurance company, or you cheating on your spouse, or you're trying to continue alimony, but you shacked up with somebody in their house that they bought, then that's a whole nother story for another time. Also, when shows like Found and Catfish and I Am in a Secret Relationship, the need for true private investigative work is paramount, not just for ratings, but also just for people's safety of mind. There are instances, as I mentioned before, there are instances where private investigators is what their bread and butter. Things like pre-employment, or even premarital background checks, you can actually make a grip per inquiry. And some of the resources that are available are not available to the general public. You actually have to be a PI or in the securities firm in order to access this information. But master files for Social Security data, if you're doing working a skip trace, those things are a lot of that stuff is online and also available to the general public. But a combination of those things are going to be required if you did like pre-employment, thus the higher rates for that type of check. But I digress. In this part of the segment, after I talk about why I go and become a PI, this episode is secondary to a kid that did not want to be found. I'm going to call her Lala. There's no HIPAA policy that I would be violating, because HIPAA violations, I think, what are 10K a pop? Nah. But ethically, I am going to be changing the name and situation and even how this teenager was actually found, because nobody wants to roll up against the law. And since my show is primarily for entertainment, this is more for entertainment purposes, this is goes down as information. Lala is a 14-year-old troubled teenager that has been running away basically since she was 12. And she began to run away right after a very acrimonious divorce between her parents. Her custodial parent was her mother retained custody, and she would spend most weekends at her father's house. And in fact, the first several times where she did run away, it was either to him, he would return her because he didn't want to be caught up in some custodial interference and have to be dragged back to court. Or she would actually go run away and spend time with another childhood friend across town. And then she would be returned within some hours. So even though she did have a troubled past of running away, she was always easily able to be found, except this time. The childhood friend, the father was actually in the military, and he was actually sent to a base elsewhere. And her father moved out of the state to California, of all places, for a job. However, I was contacted by the father by phone when the child did not show up or hadn't showed up at home and had gone missing. I worked the case like I did. Evidently, she was a selfie queen, and he had multiple current pictures of her, which I had him forward. And also, by her being 14, having her own phone, which the father bought, I was also able to glean from him what her social media handles were, as well as her current address. And through social media, and in this instance, Snapchat, it appears that she was absolutely on the move. Before I wanted to basically pinpoint her, several things had to absolutely happen. In particular, she had to be declared missing. And that's where it gets a little bit sticky.
because evidently she had not, the mother hadn't seen her in about 3 days. And my question was, why didn't she report the child missing? Also, you want to report them missing and put so they can actually go on the National Databank for missing and exploited children. This will assist wherever they're found in having the police detectives or local PD to actually, when you locate the child, go pick them up. Because you don't want to transport any child unless you get a legal order allowing you to do so by the parent. But the other part of that is you also don't want to send the child back to an unsafe environment. So I started thinking, and this is when I had to put on my pediatrician's hat. What triggered this? In years past, the custodial parent will actually be the one to contact, evidently. And in this case, it wasn't. So what was the deal of why this mother didn't report this child missing for 3 days? And what triggered this? It was not that she necessarily had a fight with the mother. The mother actually had entered in a relationship with a new boyfriend that evidently this kid could not stand. And that's one of the reasons why you don't want to transport a teenager, because you don't want any harm to come to the teenager. But also, in a whip, a teenager either will lie about untoward or improper touching, etc., to get back at someone. However, I had not made contact with this kid yet, but I also knew only the most pathological kid would make up such a story. However, but you still can't put it past a teenager. And I'm going to believe you until I find the evidence of not to believe you. But instead of tiptoeing down that, this would be much, much easier. If we were to find out that it was truly unsafe for the child to go back to the mother because of this dude, I had to find this out, and I had to find this out quickly. This actually was actually a lot easier because the state that the child was located in, criminal records, as well as sexual offenders list, is readily available to the public. I was able to stake out where the child was once living. This is all within hours of me receiving the call from the father who was still actually in California. I got a first and last name when I ran the plate, and also his date of birth. And with that information, I was able to pull this joker up on both. He had an extensive criminal records list in that state of residence for this child, as well as was a registered sex offender. This was actually very concerning as to why this woman would bring someone like this around her kid. Evidently, they met online, and she was not aware of this fact. We found this child after following her snaps to her grandmother in the neighboring state. Because she was actually missing, the father flew into the state of residence for an emergency hearing. And before she was actually removed from the grandmother's location, the emergency hearing was then in place, not only because he was a registered sex offender and he should not have been around this lady and her child. He was picked up in violation of his probation. And unfortunately for this child's mother, she lost custody in this emergency hearing. And she was able to move with her father to California. It also goes with this online dating and catfishing, and then the years and time of catfishing. You got to know who you're dating. Quick Google searches through social media, or hiring somebody like me to actually find out this information for you, because this woman had so much more to use. This would have been a good $250 usage of my services before she brought someone so dangerous around her kid. This is more a cautionary tale, but there are so many other stories very similar to this. In this case, it was a mother losing custody. In other cases, it was a father losing custody or visitation or what have you. Know who you're bringing around your kids is the bottom line of this story. That is what the whole deal of this means. So I have been a little annoyed for probably like the past week because I discovered at the beginning of May that the last season of Star Trek Discovery had actually started the beginning of April. I don't know why I had May the 4th, maybe because it was May the 4th, be with you. And that's where I thought it was supposed to premiere on Paramount. And that's one of the only reasons why I've kept my subscription to Paramount, because in a way to save money, I've been like offloading, and also to save space on my Apple TV pods that I don't watch, but so much services. Like I don't watch Disney Plus, but I'm probably going to have to download this one on this particular later edition of the Apple TV, because there's something that's coming out that they talked about on the read that I think, was it Ratchet and Respectable? I don't know. But anyways, I want, I wanted to check this out, because with all of the strikes and everything, there have been no updates on a lot of my favorite shows like Star Trek Discovery, as also P-Valley. I am anticipating that coming back, but I'm hoping that's not the final season like Discovery. And I also used to play the Star Trek logs weekly on my show. And then I went back on Instagram, and it just looks like the last of the logs were from the old, but now more mature, of
the Enterprise, because I think the last episodes of Picard had the crew of Enterprise, what is it, Class D, actually got back together. And then I became annoyed that Discovery is actually, the whole precedence, let me go back, the whole precedence for Star Trek Discovery is a prequel to Next Gen. I looked up the wiki and this is what I found out. This is supposed to took place 10 years before the 24th century, which comprises they said the original series. This is actually a prequel to the original series because of the Spock character in Sarek and Burnham's relationship or relation with Spock. And we know that as a Vulcan, Spock lived for a gabillion years. But then I got annoyed because this whole last season is on a premise that was actually taken up on Next Gen. It seems like they've gotten away from what this story was supposed to be. And they could have been stayed in prequelship and basically leaned in to when they jumped ahead to the future. You remember when the red signal and they got pulled forward into the future from the 23rd century all the way to the 32nd? With the impulse of the 32nd century, we get jump technology. We evolve beyond the mycelium network. We get a treat to matter, formable matter, which is really dope. The technology in the 32nd century is so beyond and just so cool. It makes the Borg look crazy. However, they do show up, I believe, in some way, shape, or form. But that's not neither here nor there. So, of course, I go back to why are we basically... The show itself also was award-winning because it was just so diverse. They had a member of different races. Sonequa Martin Green was one of the... had a starring role along with Yeo. Was it Susan Yeo, who was the original captain of the original ship? It was like the more positive imagining about how our future and what society actually to be, because that's along, right in alignment with the vision of Gene Roddenberry. And you could tell they got coin to spin. We see a lot of action. We see best use for CGI. To me, it seems pretty dope. But it just seems that there's not that much hype about a show from this franchise that is on its last legs. Why does it seem like the writing and the energy of the cast is so much different only 5 seasons in? I like Book. He's probably one of my favorite characters. This new number one, the captain, that's on just this side of getting fired, kind of like Burnham was, the white dude with the ears. He seems to be okay. He's just this side of cranky, which I absolutely understand. When I decided to take the show off of hiatus, now that I finished writing my own personal pilot for about a serial killer, and my feature again about another serial killer, this was a great respite, and I had all these plans to look at Discovery then and now, and it's just, to me, it seems like the show is far away from what it started out to be. Because if you have rewatched the first episode, the pilot episode of this particular series, Michael Burnham, in being nosy, rose up on a Klingon outpost. And the Klingons want to use every experience with, because, you know, xenophobia at its worst. Any offlander or off-worlder, they wanted to annihilate. They used the tales of Kalis, and her defending herself against their torchbearer on one of their outposts is a way for them to start a war to get rid of the rest of us. With that said, number one, I asked myself, well, why do they have this outpost in Federation space? And then why are they just pushing for a fight? That one incident leads to what they call the ignition for the Klingon War. But the Klingons were actually in Federation space illegally anyway. So, but I don't think they actually worked that part out before they actually started exchanging laser and photon torpedoes. I also think that there was, in its prequel state, and even in when they jump forward to the future to, again, save the Federation from annihilation, there's still, to me, this is just me, there still seems to be more story to be told and to see a full growth and realization of the characters, from Saru to Book and even to Michael Burnham. Also, they spun off Section 31, but I would have loved to have seen what happened to Section 31 in the 32nd century. Is there still a need for this super secretive organization, even in the future? Because there, you need somebody that's willing to, that has to do the dirt that the political face of the Federation can't do. And I still think there are just so many people that are wanting to see the Federation disband. There's still stories to be told. But I don't know if it just got too expensive, because I can't see that. But I don't know if they could realize, when you put the show on hiatus for 2 years, because you couldn't take into consideration walkout lasting for that long. So this seems, and also the first several seasons had more episodes. It was 15 episodes this first season. And now you get it down to like, what, 6 or 7, or you can only get 6 or 7 greenlit. So you basically now save money without having to produce as many episodes. And then you don't do any of the legwork. There are no tours, no social media blitzes. Nobody's talking about it this really in the blog. So I don't know. It's just that it seems like some executive, like they replaced the original showrunner in the beginning. It seems like they are willing and they're refusing to greenlight truly inspired writing and story arc by going back to, I guess it says, well, it's safe. We just want to do what's safe. So they're going back to a story line now that was next gen put together. So this is looking for a pervasive power by the progenitors that they don't want. You don't want that this particular source of power fall into the wrong hands. So they bought back the Breen. We haven't really saw, what is the Breen? We haven't saw them, what, since Deep Space Nine? Because didn't they align themselves with, I find it rich that they align themselves with the, what is it? Gamma Quadrant. The shapeshifters. So, I don't know. Y'all are going back. Y'all are bringing back other safe storylines because either it's like the writers are resolved. They're like, we're not going to expend our energy when nobody believes in the show anymore. That leads you to uninspired writing. And that's maybe that's what it is, because I was able to binge watch all of these six episodes. And even though I was happy to see the Kalpian get his woman with the, he basically, how you gonna be food and then you basically get hooked up with one of the presidents of the Federation? That tripped me out, and I think it was dope. Booker, and also this crazy character Maul. Some of it, I like to see some of these old characters, new relationships, but it just seems like there is a sense of resignation that the cast seems to know, and the writer, the writing is reflective that this is going to come to an end, and we're not going to be, there's nothing inspired about the characters this last season. Sometimes you want people to go out with a bang, but it doesn't seem like whoever, I don't know if it's AI generated or they got the most the people that are in the writing room are probably bottom of the barrel, and they just are glad to have a job. So they're just going to turn in scripts, check for spelling errors, and keep it pushing. But this is not, it doesn't seem like this type of writing about the episodes that I have seen have been as inspired as the previous season. They've lost their spark because just the whole premise of having an anchor female, African-American female lead in a Star Trek series in itself, to me, is mind-blowing. The chances that they took, the activities that she did were just off the charts for the first four seasons. And this last season, it seems to be many missed opportunities. I don't know when they came back and the group that they have in there now, they basically said, we need a script. It needs to be contained. And we have the coin, but we ain't gonna spend it. And we don't want any surprises. We don't want any loose ends. And we don't want you to veer too outside of what a Star Trek series is. Even though we took all those risks in the beginning, it doesn't seem like those same, the same showrunners and producers and writers are not in on this current set. And what we have, it just seems to be so uninspired when this show started off as inspiration and a beacon of hope. What the good things about what society is. That's what we tuned. That's what I tuned in for every single Thursday. That's what I wrote about every single Thursday in my bonus episodes. I'm glad I didn't wait. I could binge watch it because I couldn't see. I don't really see dedicating too much time in looking at the deeper meaning of some shows when I've seen this storyline in either other franchises or in previous episodes. It doesn't make any sense. This is so far away from what the premise of the show was, based on being a prequel, then being flushed into the 32nd century and being exciting. The writing is stilted and it's stale. And you would think if you're going to go out with a bang. Why are you going to just do what is expected? To get your check? Okay. But as a fan, it's kind of disappointing because there's still so much to be told or that can be told, even in the final episodes. So with those things said, y'all need to do better, whoever the new showrunners and writers are. But I don't think I'm what is 6-7 episodes in. We're almost at probably the 10 episode run for the last season. At least I hope the finale is a lot better than what I've seen before. And it's not saying all of it's all bad. It's just not all that good.
The Shade Bunch, the Shade Bunch. I hope turning up for checks to pay for fake lifestyles were to be a part of the Shady Bunch.
I'm so glad that I can truly look forward to going to sleep on time because there is nothing happening as far as reality TV on Sunday nights anymore. They announced and activated the pause on Real Housewives of Atlanta. And I don't think it's coming back until either the end of the year or early next year, because they had to completely revamp the cast. Real Housewife of Potomac was so lame. Even the reunion was lame. I think the only thing I'm really watching now, and I just watched the season finale of Real Housewives, should be called that, because it is Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. Season finale was a couple of weeks ago now. I don't know what the deal is about Miami, but I suspect that the reunions are going to be spicy. I wonder who's going to come flying over and it's going to get into some fights. I don't think Trina is going, or Trick, because they're like older and they don't got time for getting into fights. And Trina's booed up, so she just doesn't seem she got the energy. So I don't know. We'll see. I just think all these fake narratives and false beefs got to go. The realness of it is on Atlanta, seeing, Kirk and his doll-faced wife, because she's pretty, her final show. But this back and forth between Bambi and Little Scrappy, I don't know. That's kind of dark. They got the kids involved. They go on the court. We don't need to know this junk, this stupidness. And this is one of the things where the public needs to be taken off the group chat. This was the same thing between Erica Mena and, what's his name? Street. All of his diamond jewelry and that back and forth between her and her husband before she got kicked off the show because she said some racist mess. Calling the dance hall queen a monkey. So, yeah, it's just too dark. And nobody needs that kind of drama. And plus, there are other respectable podcasts that get more streams definitely than I do that have talked about all of this stuff in great detail. Check out DJ Richie Sky. Check out The Read. Check out Ratchet and Respectable. And also check out the king of reality TV, Carlos King, if you want to know details about a lot of this stuff, because they go into great detail. Like this whole beef between Drake and Kendrick Lamar, the breakdown between Ratchet and Respectable and The Read is just so it's so good. They make comments because they actually go line by line, detailing the meaning and thought process of Kendrick's response to Drake. Because this, I'm glad they're leaving. It's like creatives leaving their beef on, they call it on wax, because, you know, vinyl, that's how people used to do it, say it back in the day. But Chris Brown is unhinged. If he's saying he'll draw a gun and kill somebody, da 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 da, he's the only one liable in the mix that can't take a joke. And it will willingly go to fisticuffs or worse because you called him out on some stupid mess. He's unhinged. But The Read, actually, their last episode did his response to the Drake of it all, which is hysterical. And I really didn't know it was all that deep. And I don't take it all that deep because I don't listen to either one of them. Definitely not into rap like that, but just they talk about it makes you want to download and listen to these songs because they point out some really great things. And I also go on say on record to say this. There's been a report in pop culture recently that the feds also be listening to these lyrics. So if you are going to confess to tomfoolery, shenanigans, and underage dating and sexual contact, you better be very careful because it seems like Kendrick is verbalizing the receipts that these prosecutors can lean on and utilize to your detriment. So stop it. And with that said, I also just wanted to bring up the latest episode of the only, it is the only Real Housewives series that actually just recently premiered. It was last week that Real Housewives of Jersey premiered. I really hadn't been into it like that. And I've noticed, I've watched certain episodes watching when it first started and Teresa Giudice flipping tables and her pulling off Danielle's little ponytail. But they also is, the word is they have, besides Atlanta and Potomac, they have some of the most meanest fans. There was this whole thing about the set or the cast minus Teresa and I think Jennifer meeting with Teresa's brother prior to the start of the show to figure out how they were going to take down Teresa. And this is breaking the fourth wall, I believe, when meaning that. And also just how a piece of crap Teresa's brother is, Joe. Because he basically chose fame and fortune in the show over his sister. His sister's force multiplier of the show, evidently still. They call him Jane Feuda. This is Joe Feuda, I think is Danielle's husband. Basically wanted to see, get his interaction and his confrontation with Teresa on camera instead of talking to her husband in private. He wanted to get it on camera because he wanted to make a moment. But she, of course, in Teresa Giudice's, formerly Giudice's fashion, showed him whose show he was on. Because she read, wrote, and put him in his place. But the show in the beginning was what people and what made Jersey. They were talking about the kids growing up, going to college. I think one of Joe and Melissa's daughters is going to Michigan and somebody else is going to some other school in a cold part of the country. But then they went back to, let's see us have beef with Teresa. As a fan of the show, we're tired of this, again, false beef and people just sitting riding her coattails.
and giving us nothing. And either Melissa and her husband need to fish, or they just need to cut bait, because this back and forth between them trying to get rid of someone on the show, the show unofficial producer, is old. It ain't happening, and y'all gonna keep it pushing. And it's also, it's almost a guarantee that you really are not coming back next year. Because if you sit and think that you can give nothing and still get paid, you better think again, because that's the math ain't mathing on that one. And that's basically it. So I have nothing to give about a battle over, this is what's her name said. Demetria L. Lucas says the battle over dick supremacy, because that's the beef between Drake, Chris Brown, and everybody else. So no, I don't have any. It's not my turn. I don't care about that. There's not a whole bunch in the Real Housewives zeitgeist that I really want to talk about, because again, Carlos King in his previous Thursdays, did a pretty awesome breakdown of the beef and the cast and the revamp of the show. He got Messy Mondays and Thirsty Thursdays. And I probably won't watch Jersey until after I watch either one of those shows to see if it's even worth me watching. Because I had to rewatch it because of some of his commentary. So they got extra streams out of me because of Carlos King. Go figure. So that's how we're going to end this episode, and I'm going to end it with a positive word. I used to scoff at people making this statement, because of its simplicity, or maybe because it sounded more like an admonishment that I was being everything but kind. But then when I started investigating it for myself, that's when I realized that I was confusing politeness with kindness. Politeness is a fake, superficial manner in which there's no required investment, no self-reflection. But being kind is an adjective. It is an action. If you're kind to yourself first, it's like exercise memory. You will continue and be kind to others. Let that sit with you for a while. I'm going to try to be kind to myself. I'll be kind to others. It's very simple, and you gotta repeat it. Lean into the spirit of a new year by counting your blessings, giving to others, and spreading happiness. I know I will. And this episode or this podcast is my means to spread joy and happiness and light and enlightenment. There's so much going on with aggression and just meanness. But if I can leave you with one small positive thought, start your day with that. That can change everything for you and just basically change your day. Don't forget to check out Dale's Angels Inc. for the notes on this podcast, as well as other works by CQM and other contributors that are in work or in being edited right now. Also, check out my Instagram feed, Tenfro is Reading. You can check me out on Facebook, Tenfro is Reading Book Club, as well as my YouTube channel, Tenfro is Reading and Eating. And what I'm just chatting and streaming at TV Food Wine Girl on Twitter. Navigate to Writer's Block Coffee or shipabagofdicks.com. Use my promo code Tenfro Coffee or Tenfro Got Jokes, respectively, to get a percentage off of your order. Don't forget to drop me a line at tenfrowasreading@gmail.com. All non-trolling messages may be actually read online, and you can do the same if you are in Podbean or Anchor or wherever you listen to the podcast. And again, shedding light and positivity. And I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it.
Until next time, bye.